natural gas liquids should not be shipped overseas and being burnt in Japanese cooking ovens. It should be kept home.
The Senate debates exporting natural gas from the U.S. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 12th. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, criticism for Shell's plan to tow the Kulleh to Dutch Harbor before sending the rig to Asia.
It's clearly unacceptable that they would be willing to tow the Kulleh with that 150,000 gallons of fuel on board.
Those stories and more on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
The Senate Energy Committee held its first meeting of the new Congress. It wasted no time in discussing one of the most controversial issues the committee will tackle this session, exporting liquefied natural gas. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, some hope exports from the lower 48 could lead to more exports from Alaska.
The new chairman of the Senate Energy Committee, Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden, has been skeptical of exports, fearing what may happen to domestic prices and what that means for major consumers.
Instead of a manufacturing renaissance, major gas consumers could find themselves hit hard with energy price hikes and forced to sideline job-creating efforts.
Wyden was not appeased by a Department of Energy study that found exporting LNG would lead to a net benefit for the U.S. economy. That's a view echoed by Dow Chemical CEO Andrew Liveris, who testified before the committee.
One study does not make a strategy. Okay, one study does not make the decision. I think we have lots of inputs to this decision, not the least of them being making sure we have responsible supply.
A costly supply matters to Liveris. He says his company buys more gas than many countries, and his chemicals end up in all sorts of products. He says they add value to every facet of the economy.
Natural gas liquids should not be shipped overseas and being burnt in Japanese cooking ovens. It should be kept home.
The Department of Energy is weighing about a dozen export applications from the lower 48. Nobody at the hearing would guess how many would win approval. Senator Lisa Murkowski, the committee's top Republican, asked the panel and all demurred. Senator Wyden says it's time to re-examine the nation's natural gas laws. They've been on the books for decades, since well before exports were even being considered. But Senator Murkowski says any new process cannot impose too many burdens on industry. She noted the long-standing regulatory process through the Department of Energy.
The debate on this issue has focused on the impacts to domestic natural gas prices and supply, but I think we also need to include within this discussion an understanding of the role that the market forces will play, not only on domestic prices, but the number of projects that may actually be built.
Those projects could produce a glimmer of hope for Alaska's producers, says Larry Persily. He's the federal coordinator for the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline.
The approval of lower 48 LNG exports is going to give you reason to believe that if and when the time comes that an Alaska project applies for export authority, it too would be granted approval by the Department of Energy.
Because, Persily says, it's only fair if every state can export. But he urges caution.
The export approval is one piece of the package. It's got to go in. You need U.S. Department of Energy export approval. You need a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission certificate for the liquefaction plant. And if there's a pipeline connected to it, you certainly need financing. You need buyers. This is just one piece of it.
And the largest hurdle to more exports from Alaska is the $65 billion it could take to build a pipeline from the North Slope to the non-existent liquefaction plants at Tidewater. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
In the latest setback to Shell's Arctic drilling plans for this summer, the company says it's sending both of its drilling rigs to Asia for dry dock repairs. The company says the Noble Discoverer needs an engine overhaul, and the Kulleck needs major repairs to its internal electrical systems and hull after running aground near Kodiak on New Year's Eve. Shell spokesperson Curtis Smith says the Kulleck was damaged inside when seawater came through open hatches and that the hull was compromised in some areas.
We felt like dry dock in Asia was the best place to really get a good look at the underside of the hull, make a better analysis about the next steps and the timeline for those next steps.
Smith says the company is planning to tow the Kulleck to Dutch Harbor and then put the rig on a larger heavy lift vessel for the rest of the trip to Asia. That vessel will pull up next to the Kulleck and dip down into the water to scoop the drill rig up onto its deck.
So imagine if somebody were floating on the surface of, say, a swimming pool, and you went up underneath them and sort of were taller than them, of course, and put your shoulders on them and stood up, at that point they would be on your shoulders or on top of you, and that's sort of what happens in this dry tow scenario.
For the trip to Dutch Harbor, the Kulleck will be towed by three tugs. Only one tug was towing it during the reverse trip when its tow line parted in rough seas. Smith says the fuel on board won't be removed until Dutch Harbor. That troubles environmental activist Rick Steiner. Steiner says he doesn't understand why the Kulleck's substantial fuel load hasn't already been offloaded.
It's clearly unacceptable that they would be willing to tow the Kulleck with that 150,000 gallons of fuel on board along the Alaska Peninsula through Unimak Pass over to Dutch Harbor with any kind of a risk of the vessel breaking loose again and grounding or foundering and sinking with that pollution risk. You know, they should clearly get the fuel off now before they take it out of Kaluta Bay.
Steiner is also concerned that Shell and the Unified Command haven't released more information on the condition of the Kulleck. Shell says it hopes the Coast Guard will approve its tow plan in a few days and expects it could have the vessel in Dutch Harbor in about 2 weeks. He says the company doesn't know yet how this will affect the 2013 drilling season in the Arctic. Legislation that would limit the circumstances in which public funds can be used to pay for abortions was introduced in the Senate on Monday, and as APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports, the bill may have trouble standing up in court scrutiny.
Right now, if a low-income woman is receiving Medicaid, the state is required to cover the cost of her abortion if her doctor determines that the procedure qualifies as medically necessary. A bill sponsored by Senate Majority Leader John Coghill, a Republican from Fairbanks, would change that by defining the term to mean a threat of serious risk to the life or physical health of a woman. There are a few aspects of the bill that could conflict with previous decisions of the state Supreme Court. For one, the bill purposefully excludes mental health exceptions to the funding ban. Senator Pete Kelly, a Fairbanks Republican, is one of the bill's co-sponsors. He explains why the bill was drafted to leave out psychological conditions from their medically necessary definition.
It is the vague language that has been used to drive a Mack truck through it. We heard, not testimony, but we heard people tell us who work in the industry that if someone claimed that they were stressed out about their pregnancy, that that was enough for the mental health portion of the statute.
During the last fiscal year, the state paid for approximately 500 abortions through Medicaid, but information on how many of those were for mental health reasons is not publicly available. This isn't the first attempt by anti-abortion legislators to restrict public funding for the procedure. A bill to limit Medicaid payments for abortion was introduced last year, and past budgets have also included language prohibiting those payments. And every time these efforts have been made, the Alaska Supreme Court has found them unconstitutional. Kelly is prepared for that to happen again.
You know, I'm convinced that the courts, because I don't believe they're really following the law, they're trying to make law. I figure they'll probably find some other way after this, but we just have to go through the exercise.
The court's rationale for blocking these efforts is that they violate the state's equal protection guarantees. Janet Kreps, an attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights, breaks down the legal reasoning.
If you pay for all medically necessary services for pregnant women, then you need to pay for all medically necessary services for women seeking abortion. And you can't discriminate based on the woman's choice, as between carrying a pregnancy to term or seeking an abortion.
She says that based on her experience arguing abortion-related cases in Alaska, she doesn't expect the bill to hold up against Supreme Court scrutiny. With Republican majorities in both chambers of the legislature, the bill is being introduced in a favorable environment for passage. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a local high school football team comes up with a plan to help prevent concussions.
We start understanding that these injuries have a severe impact on people and that we have to be careful.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Alaska's redistricting board met today in Anchorage to consider its options in the wake of an Alaska Supreme Court ruling requiring a revision of the 2012 redistricting plan. The court allowed the current plan to be used in only last November's general election, but has required the board to redraw the plan so it is in line with the Alaska Constitution. The board has filed a motion for a reconsideration. Board Attorney Michael White says the Supreme Court did not indicate one way or another what needs to be changed in the plan.
They said that we did not follow the proper process in adopting the Hickel plan, which is a plan that ignores federal law and only draws a plan based only on the Alaska Constitution, and then that is checked to determine whether that complies with the Voting Rights Act.
The Federal Voting Rights Act ensures that minorities are represented in the legislative districts. A review of the Supreme Court's December decision topped the board's agenda before the panel went into executive session. It's no secret that the high cost of energy in rural Alaska is a barrier to economic development and one of the primary reasons many residents are leaving village life behind. In some rural southeast communities, electric bills are up to 275% higher than the national average, and some households spend as much as 50% of their income on home heating fuel. Experts say there's no magic bullet solution to the problem, so as KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, some communities are embracing a comprehensive approach.
With 800 homes in 12 communities, the nonprofit Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority is the largest provider of low and fixed income housing in southeast Alaska. President and CEO Ricardo Worrell says the agency also is among the largest non-government consumers of electricity and heating fuel in the region.
The cost of heating alone for our organization consumes about one-third of our operating budget. So we're paying more than $1 million a year just to heat the homes that we do own and operate.
In 2011, CAKE officials asked the Housing Authority to sponsor a free energy education workshop in the community. The workshop touched on topics such as alternative energy, conservation, and Alaska's place in the global and national energy pictures.
It was really neat to see the city, the tribe, the local corporation, the school district all come together so that they can look at and evaluate different technologies that are available to them, consider what is most feasible for them, long-term and short-term energy goals for the community.
Gary Williams is executive director of the Organized Village of CAKE, the tribal government for the small Kupernoff Island community of about 600. He says residents pay about 65 cents per kilowatt hour for electricity generated by burning diesel fuel at between $5.50 and $6 per gallon. The community has long desired a 40-mile electrical intertie with Petersburg, which is on less expensive hydropower. While that project is in the permitting stage, Williams says CAKE has used workshops to focus on comprehensive energy solutions. That includes alternatives like wind and wood biomass, as well as conservation and weatherization.
That's been part of the mix and a very important one because it's probably perhaps the best bang for the buck to tighten up homes in a just make your BTUs more effective.
As a result of CAKE's energy workshops, the village was selected last year as one of five Alaska communities to participate in the Federal Department of Energy's START program. START stands for Strategic Technical Assistance Response Team, essentially experts who work with local communities on energy planning. One of those experts is Brian Hirsch with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Anchorage.
It's really not one size fits all, but we are developing an approach that is very community-centric and team-based, and I think replicable for lots of agencies and communities.
In CAKE, the START program helped improve an existing wind energy project. It also provided technical assistance for the installation of solar panels at the CAKE Village office building. Williams says the panels could provide up to a third of the building's energy needs.
I could see the potential where something the size of our installation could take care of a typical CAKE home.
Clinkett and Haida's Worrell says the Housing Authority is also pursuing alternative energy solutions in CAKE. The agency will soon be trying out wood pellet heating systems at some of its properties in the village, thanks to a $500,000 grant from the Alaska Legislature last year. If successful, Worrell says it could be used in other communities and perhaps someday spark a wood pellet industry in rural Southeast.
The market in Southeast, you know, may not quite be big enough for the cost that it takes to manufacture wood pellets at this time, but I know that a lot of folks are really watching and waiting, and this will sort of be the first step.
Other communities are following CAKE's lead. Angoon, Hoona, and Yakutat held similar energy education workshops in the past 2 weeks. Hirsch says the deadline to apply for participation in the next round of the START program is coming up next month. Williams says he'd encourage those other communities to go for it and says CAKE is willing to partner with other villages on regional initiatives.
We've been on the receiving end a lot, so I'd just as soon have us on the return end too, you know.
In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Anchorage School Board member Gretchen Guest today announced her resignation from the Anchorage School Board effective March 1st. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The former Anchorage School Board president and state legislator, who is director of business development for Providence Health and Services Alaska, is moving to Jacksonville, Florida. She took a job at St. Vincent's Healthcare there. Jeannie Mackey is president of the Anchorage School Board. She says during Guess's 2 years on the board, she's led the district through some major changes.
One of those is our superintendent search. We developed a strategic plan. We have developed a long-range financial plan, designed a new budget process. So all of those things are new things that we've done fairly recently, and Gretchen has been very instrumental in leading us through those initiatives.
Guess is one of few board members who've suggested alternatives to Superintendent Jim Browder's budget cut plan. Mackey says Guess will remain on the board to complete the budget process, including the final vote next Thursday. Because Guess is not up for re-election until next spring, Mackey says a replacement will be appointed by April 1st. Applications will be accepted between March 15th and 19th. The school board will hold a special meeting to appoint the new member on March 30th. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
The effects of concussions on football players and ideas on how to prevent them have become a prominent issue in recent years. One Anchorage area school is taking steps in preventing more traumatic brain injuries in their student-athletes by purchasing new high-tech helmets. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Last season, the Chugiak High School football team reported five players who experienced concussion-like symptoms.
Chugiak's head football coach, Duncan Shackelford, says even though there is no helmet on the market that can prevent every concussion from happening, these new helmets would greatly improve the protection around the players' heads.
I think their real impetus right here was to help protect that lower part of the head where a lot of kids would get, helmet up underneath and stuff like that and get that snap sometimes underneath that jaw, to give just a little bit more protection down there. Also, I've noticed that around the sides of the head, there's not much movement onto the helmet. It gives a more conformed fit around the head.
The helmets are called Rydell 360s, and they come with a hefty price tag, about $300 each. And if the team is able to get all 100 helmets it's hoping for, it totals out to around $30,000. As the Anchorage School District battles a $25 million budget shortfall, funding for equipment upgrades isn't easy to come by. So, Shackelford says the Chugiak High School Football Booster Club and team are looking for other ways to help pay for this new equipment. The public.
The Adopt a Helmet program came about from our booster club saying, look, we know that the school is strapped for money right now, that really tough to provide the kids with constant updated equipment. What can we do to help?
Shackelford says the program isn't only aiming to update the team's equipment, but also to help raise awareness about the seriousness of concussions and traumatic brain injuries in sports. In response to state legislation passed in 2011, the Alaska School Activities Association, or ASAA, developed a policy for reporting suspected concussions as well as a gradual return-to-play protocol. Rush Schreckenghost is the associate director of ASAA.
If it is a concussion, then there is a return-to-play protocol used, and that is not based on days, it's based on steps. They have to complete one step to get to the next step. Okay? And can it get done in a few days? Typically not. Typically it would take 6 or 7 days, but it does depend on how fast that they go from one step to the other step.
The steps Schreckenghost is referring to begin no earlier than 24 hours after the player is completely free of concussion-like symptoms, and they include a gradual increase in physical activity over the course of several days before the player might be eligible to return. This policy was formally adopted in April of 2012. Coach Shackelford says in recent years, there has been more of an effort to understand concussions and how to prevent them.
We have matured more in the sports at the high school, collegiate, and professional level. We started understanding that these injuries have a severe impact on people and that we have to be careful.
He hopes these new helmets will fill in another piece of the puzzle in preventing more traumatic brain injuries from occurring. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
For more about Chugiak High School's Adopt a Helmet program, go to alaskapublic.org. Three of this year's top four Yukon Quest teams will go on to race in this year's Iditarod, Alaska's other long-distance sled dog race. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, all top four teams are planning long-term Yukon Quest careers for their kennels as well.
It took Alan Moore 3 years to claim a Yukon Quest win. He says it's likely he'll be back for another race next year.
Well, you never know. It's been three in a row, so it's probably a pretty good chance.
Yeah, made it.
Moore crossed the finish line with 11 of his 14 starting dogs. He'll now set his sights on the Iditarod that starts March 2nd.
And so we tried to run all the dogs that were in our kennel. And then from that group of dogs, from those we'll choose, Iditarod. And the top ones will go with Allie and the rest will go with me.
Allie is Moore's wife and 2000 Quest champion Allie Zirkel. Moore has made a career of training up the young dogs at their kennel for competitive runs in mid-distance races, as well as the Quest and the Iditarod. One dog that knows the Quest perhaps better than any other is Walter. He's a 9-year-old black husky with brown and white eyebrows and nose. He goes everywhere with Hugh Neff.
Make sure you get a picture of Walter. This is his last race.
When Neff pulled across the finish line in second place in this year's Quest, the Toke Musher made a point to praise his dog.
He's got about probably 35,000 miles on him, so he's been around the block.
Hugh Neff himself has finished 13 Yukon Quests. He hasn't yet decided if he'll try for a 14th next year.
Next year, I might give the Quest a break and do another race, a native race. If anybody knows me, I'm a native wannabe, and I try to go to any village I can when I get an opportunity, so I might go do a race in Unalakleet next year.
Neff is skipping out on this year's Iditarod. Instead, he'll take his leaders George and Jewel to Norway. They'll race in the 600-plus-mile Finnmarksloppet next month. One musher who's definitely returning to the Yukon Quest is Brent Sass.
Oh, are you going to see me again? You're never going to get rid of me is, I think, the biggest statement there. Yeah, I'm coming back. I'll be back every year until I can't run this race anymore, or at least a wild and free team will be here for years and years to come.
This year's third-place finisher shed tears of joy at the finish line. It's the highest he's placed in 7 races.
You know, it's been a long time coming. I spent 8-9 years trying to build a dog team that could do this, and they showed they got what it takes. You know, I'm really, really, really proud of them.
Sass put 2 young dogs, Celia and Sound, in lead early on in the race, and the 2 led the team for more than 900 miles to Fairbanks from Whitehorse. Upon finishing, the Eureka musher presented both dogs with raw steak, buried his face in their muzzles, and praise them for a job well done.
Oh, good dogs, you guys. Sound and Celia, they're the heroes of this race for me.
Celia and Sound were instrumental in strengthening what was already a good friendship between Sass and this year's fourth-place finisher, Jake Berkowitz. The 2 dogs led Berkowitz's leaders, Pixie and Mullet, over Eagle Summit this year. This is Pixie's 2nd Yukon Quest with Jake Berkowitz.
Yeah, Pixie's real young. That's her brother, Mullet, with her, the one wagging his tail over there. Yeah, she's got a long racing career ahead of her. She's just 4 years old.
The Big Lake musher says he'll likely be back for another Yukon Quest in the future.
It won't be next year, just because we have other plans for next year. But, yeah, you can count us back. There are definitely things that we'd like to conquer better than we did this year, and obviously improve every year.
More than half the field is still on the trail, stretched out across nearly 200 miles between Fairbanks and the Circle checkpoint. They'll continue to come through the finish chute on the Chena River through the end of the week. On the Yukon Quest Trail in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org or follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C., and Josh Edge from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give, or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Regardless of where you live, you've got a better shot at earning the Alaska Performance Scholarship by enrolling in the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. ANSEP challenges students with classes that are necessary to earn the scholarship. ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.